Hello and welcome to Radio Prague International. I'm Daniela Lazarova. We continue today with the sixth and penultimate episode in our series No Night So Dark, telling the story of five generations of a remarkable Czech family. In the previous episode, we followed the career of the architect Rudolf Fels, along with his wife Ida and their two sons, Tomáš and Martin. We joined the family in 1930s Prague, where they lived in a smart new flat designed by Rudolf himself. This week, the shadow of international politics makes itself felt on the family, as their world suddenly begins to shrink. But we start by going further back in time.
So, my little boy learnt religion from the village priest and grasped from the outset that, according to that teaching, God, the Father of the Lord Jesus, was different from the God I had described to him.
We are in the village of Osek, in the world of Shimon Wells's memoir. It is 1890, and Rudolf is 8 years old.
The crucifixion bewildered him most of all. And but for me and my efforts to console him and the local boys who chided him for it, he would have turned into a rabid anti-Semite. But believe me, it was a tragic conflict within his childish soul. A few weeks later, the archdeacon came to the school to examine the children. Rudolf brought home a holy picture as a reward for being the most knowledgeable. It was a garishly coloured print of the Lord Jesus, whom he loved so tremendously. Handsome and serious, with a golden halo thickly painted round his nicely combed hair, with a side parting, stumbling beneath the burden of the cross, amidst the throng of evil and ugly figures and scowling faces of Jews. Embossed on the picture in silver letters were the words, Ecce Homo. Rudolf dashed in from school, radiant with happiness, and started to explain the picture. And when he reached the end, and look, Papa, those scruffy people down below, apparently those are the Jews, I stroked the poor little fellow's head and thought to myself that that was not the sort of teaching which Jesus Christ, that creature of light, would have wanted.
On the hill above Carlsbad, we encountered our first real signs of the joy of the German population at their annexation to Germany. Swastikas were going up on nearly every house, at the windows, on the roofs, and on the doorways.
On the 4th of October, 1938, a few days after Hitler annexes the Czech borderlands, a small group of British and American journalists heads off from Prague to Karlovy Vary. At the wheel is Vincent Sheehan from the New York Herald Tribune. He describes what they see.
There were ladders against the houses so that the inhabitants could put the swastikas up as high on the facade as possible. Men, women, and children greeted our car as it passed with the fascist salute and shouts of Heil Hitler. We went down the winding road to Carlsbad and past the two great Jewish charitable institutions, one a hospital, the other a home for the aged. The hospital was shut up tight, without a sign of life. The home for the aged still seemed to be inhabited, by whom I do not know, and actually had several swastika flags hanging from the window.
By coincidence, the retirement home that Sheehan refers to was one of Rudolf Fels's most successful architectural projects, completed just a few years before.
American Consulate General, Prague 2, Ponska 2.
Immediately after Hitler annexes the Czech borderlands, the Wells family applies for a visa to the United States in October 1938. 6 months later, when the Nazis occupy the rest of the country on the 15th of March 1939, they are still waiting for a reply. But a week later, a letter arrives.
The Consulate General wishes to confirm herewith that you and your family were registered here under the Czechoslovak quota on October 30th, 1938. Under the present immigration laws, it is assumed that your turn might be reached within the next fiscal year, i.e. between July 1st, 1939 and June 30th, 1940. This estimation of your waiting time is given without any obligation. Yours very truly, for the Consul General, J. James Ingle, American Vice Consul.
The letter is dated the 22nd of March, 1939. This is exactly a week after Hitler's troops march into Prague. From now on, the family has as good as no chance of leaving the country. Any talk of quotas is pure fantasy. Only Tomáš succeeds in leaving. From June 1939, the Nuremberg racial laws begin to apply in the so-called protectorate. After the occupation, Rudolf is no longer allowed to work as an architect. Instead, he spends much of his time sketching.
His drawings have a real flow. They have rhythm, movement.
Is it okay, David?
Please do.
And some of these sketches also survive. Several of them were made into engravings. They're here in Colin's trunk, detailed sketches of various spots in old Prague. Here is the old town, seen from the Tower of the Clementinum. You can make out every house and church, every person running down the street. There are dark clouds set to burst any minute. Ida encouraged Rudolf to do these sketches. The engravings brought in a bit of money, and Rudolf was distracted from the frustrations of the time.
We can't complain. Things are orderly, quiet, nothing to distract us, no newspapers, no radio. We're walking about as if during the interval at the theatre, where they're putting on a play that we don't understand. Our heads are slightly bowed, stupid, without worries or responsibilities, for others are acting in our place. Talking of the theatre takes my mind back to Dad's memoir and to the time all those decades ago when he was a young apprentice in Prague. It must have been around 1870.
Once or twice a month, I would treat myself to the theatre. I had a favourite corner in the Gods where the seats cost 10 kreutzer. At the Estates Theatre, we would go and see the doorkeeper, who would let us in for 5 kreutzer, 5 minutes before curtain up. We were not the theatre management's best clients. The productions I loved most and remembered best of all were The Bartered Bride, Don César, Die Räuber, Faust, Die Vogelhändler, and don't laugh because it was lovely, The Miller and His Child. How I enjoyed Gotthold Ephraim Lessing. And not just because he wrote Nathan the Wise, but isn't that a splendid passage where Nathan talks about the three rings? How he talks straight to the heart. How is it possible that people just refuse to understand it and that they are able to kill each other because they happen to be Jews, Christians or Muslims?
Probably bought them up.
No, these are wartime.
You've been hiding these, you have.
Yeah, to
Colin, you've been hiding these.
Lieber Thomas. These are from...
During the first 2 years of the occupation, the family were able to send letters to Tomáš in England. Tomáš's son Colin still has them, among all the other papers. After the war broke out in September 1939, the letters had to be sent via the United States, through Ida's cousin Kurt Adler in New York. Some letters are sent via the family friend, Peter Lothar, who has managed to escape to Switzerland.
Would you like a cup of tea?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that'd be very nice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Jerry?
Please.
The letters are a record of the family's attempt to lead a normal life in abnormal conditions, sometimes full of hope, sometimes verging on despair.
My dear lad, Today, to our great surprise, your letters from the 27th, the 28th, the 29th, and the 30th arrived. We hope that this one will reach you too.
The atmosphere is getting worse and worse. Do you listen to the radio?
Today is a beautiful, quiet and sunny, hot Sunday afternoon. We're at home, and all our minds are full of thoughts of you, Tom. Martin is on the terrace, writing you a letter with a blissful smile on his face. It must be something nice. He went to play tennis with Mum this morning, so they didn't want to go swimming this afternoon under St. Matthew's. The latest ban only applies to swimming pools owned by the city. Do you read the papers? What do they write about us?
If things don't get any worse than now, we should all come out of this alive and well. You can't imagine with what enthusiasm we will pick up our lives again. May truth prevail. But for now, we just have to take each day as it comes.
So maybe there's a reference. Still in 39, maybe they were still functioning.
The following letter from Ida is from the 30th of August, 1939, just a few hours before war breaks out.
Things have quietened down a bit after the nervousness of the last few days. No killing. That's what every mother hopes. The British consulate is closed, and we've heard that the English have all left. The borders are closed, and Uncle Otto managed to get out with the last train.
Dear Tom, this is just a quick note. I was ill for 3 days, but I'm fine now. I've just been repairing the deck chairs, but most of the time I'm bored. I might be going to our postman's cottage for 2 weeks. I loved your letter and read it twice today. As for school, well, I had no trouble with the exam, but it was a shock the first time I came into the classroom. It is so different from the French lycée. All the noise. When they've got nothing better to do, they spit at each other. All hell breaks out between classes. Chalk, sponges, school books flying through the air. It's a bit quieter when the teacher comes in, but the masters are very mean. But we're still confident that we'll get to sunny America. Martin.
What else have you got here? Let's just have a look. There's all sorts of bits and pieces here.
1940.
Yeah.
I didn't know. I see that for the first time.
It's interesting. There is so much stuff actually that you keep turning up stuff for the first time. You're
trying to work it to fit it all together.
Yeah.
In Colin's living room, taking papers out from his father's box, we have come across a letter sent from the United States to Tomasz in England, dated the 8th of March, 1940. It is from Martha Sharp, who together with her husband, the Unitarian pastor, Waitstill Sharp, is helping Jews from occupied Europe to get to America.
Dear Mr. Vels, I would do anything I could to help your father, but I have no understanding of what their present need happens to be. I have been trying to get them a position, but have not yet succeeded, though I think there will not be a great difficulty once they arrive. However, the position could not help your father to leave, since his turn was to come on the regular quota in April. I would do anything in my power to help them, and your young brother.
Dear Mrs. Sharp, thank you for your letter of March the 8th.
The draft of Tomasz's answer has also been preserved, scribbled on the back of Martha Sharp's original letter. In many places he scratched it out and started again, trying to get the wording just right.
I did not send it any sooner because I was waiting for my parents' reply. I translated your kind letter word for word and sent it to them. You cannot imagine how delighted they were. We are sorry to hear, they write, that Mrs. Sharp cannot help us for the time being. We have to wait our turn patiently. But the thought that we have friends who will help us after our arrival in the USA gives us new strength and confidence. This letter from my parents is dated April 12th. In an earlier letter, my father says that the American consulate is working very slowly and they will have to wait very much longer than expected. Let us hope their turn will come before the end of this year.
At some point early in 1941, the Wells family have to leave their flat in Dobrovskaya Street. Around the same time, Ida's mother, Teresa, dies. Her health has been poor for some time. Along with several other Jewish families, they are made to move into a flat in Marnesova Street. The flat belongs to Emil Vogel, who himself later survives the Lodz ghetto and Auschwitz. After the war, he writes to Tomasz in England.
Dear Mr. Wells, your parents and your brother moved into my flat, where they had just one room. That's how things were at that time. They were as well as could be expected under those repressive circumstances. They were in good health. Your brother spent his free time sketching, and we were all very fond of him. I remember he enjoyed playing the flute and was good at it. Your father had no work, and your mother cooked for your father and brother.
Our room faces south, so let's hope it will be quite easy to keep warm in the winter. I'll explain how we sleep. There is a folding bed attached to the wall. The other we use as a couch, but move it along a bit in the evening to make room for the folding bed. That gives us a nice double bed. It's just right. As a loving old couple, we'd have found it hard to sleep apart. Martin sleeps on the grey couch. I still go back to where we used to live to do the shopping. It's further away, but they know us there. Here we are strangers. But you know, it's always tough at first.
This is Rimska Street. I'm outside what looks like an ordinary turn-of-the-century apartment block. But this building houses the offices and prayer room of one of the Czech Protestant churches, the Union of Czech Brethren. And it's important to the story of the Wells family.
Ahoy.
My name is Marta Holeková. I am the granddaughter of Josef Stifter. Josef Stifter was a Protestant minister in Prague, in Vinohrady. He had 9 children, and their home was opened to anybody who were interested. During the late 30s, he was introduced to Rudolf Wells, the Jewish architect, and his wife Ida, and 2 sons, Thomas and Martin.
We're entering the building and going up to the prayer room on the first floor. Josef Stifter and Rudolf Wells became friends.
They found a very deep relationship between each other. When the situation in the late 30s started to be more difficult for Jews, my grandfather invited Welses to his family and to his church, and the relationship between these families seemed to be very strong and deep.
Marta has taken a photograph out of her handbag.
It happened in 1941. We can see on the picture my grandfather, Josef Stifter, and his wife, Františka Stifter, my mother standing just behind Mrs. Wells, who is sitting to the left of the picture, and on the other side by my grandfather and his mother, there sits Mr. Wells as the very honored guest. And among the young, there sits Martin as a teenager.
And this is the last known photograph of the Wells family.
Yes.
In the background of the photo that Marta has shown me, you can just make out a calendar. And this is something that the Stifter family has treasured ever since.
The calendar was made by Martin, and Marta shows it to me over tea and cake in her family's flat in a leafy suburb on the southern edge of Prague.
For each month, there is a coloured drawing of the characteristic of the month, and there are often children playing with something. They are making the snowman, and there is a little dog, or they are at the circus. And on the last page of this calendar is a happy Christmas and a lot of good in the new year, 1941, wishes family wells.
Prague seems as bustling as ever, but we are all getting more nervous. There are rumors of transports. For the first time, we've heard a new department called G has been set up at the Jewish community.
The letter G means ghetto.
Vermögenserklärung, it's a declaration of property.
That's right.
Valid papers. God. All the details, every single thing that's in their flat.
With Colin Wells and Jerry Turner, I'm looking at a list of all the Wells family's property, a list they were forced to compile during the autumn of 1941, a last step before being sent to Terezin.
Two ladders.
And they were confiscated anyway.
All taken, everything's confiscated. Ida Wells. One skirt, eight blouses, two pullovers. Martin Wells.
A copy of the list ended up in the box of family things in Colin's house in Oxford. Another piece of evidence of the crime committed against the Wells family.
November 1941, so just before they're sent to Terezin.
But the Nazis did not get everything.
It happened in the end of the year 1941. They received the summons to be deported to Terezin. So in this time, they asked my grandfather to hide some of their valuable things, which was their documents, correspondence, photographs, and many more other things, which my grandfather promised to hide. And they, of course, thought that they will return, and my grandfather also thought that he will give that all to them back when they return.
Do not worry. We are all calm and steady and truly in good form. If possible, Josef or his wife will write to you when they hear from us. With sincere affection, we embrace you, the Wells family.
With the most treasured family possessions safely hidden with Josef Stifter and his family, and a few days before they are deported to Terezin, Ida writes a short letter to Tomasz in England, which is sent via their old family friend, the actor Peter Lothar in Switzerland.
We are strong in our faith. Give our love to all our friends. Thinking of you all keeps us going. Keep well. A special hug to Tom and Joy, and the same to you as well. Our dear friends from me and Martin, keep well, as we hope to as well.
In part six of the series No Night So Dark, we heard Markéta Richterová as Ida Wells, Oliver Dubsky as Martin Wells, Alex Wendt as Rudolf Wells, Gordon Truffitt as Shimon Wells, Dominic Yoon as Tomasz Wells, Patricia Goodson as Martha Sharp, John Tregellis as Guido Lagus, Grant Podelko as Vincent Sheen and J. James Ingle, Stephen Weeks as Emil Fogel and Colin Wells, Marta Holekova, Jerry Turner and David Vaughan as themselves. The series was written by David Vaughan and edited by Jiří Matějček. It was recorded in the studios of Radio Prague International. We'll be continuing with a final episode, part 7, next week. You can also subscribe to the series as a podcast. That's all from us for now. You'll find us at radio.cz. Thanks for listening and take care.